This podcast is brought to you by Day Soul Coffee Lab out of Birmingham, Alabama. Y'all, I consider myself a coffee connoisseur. I absolutely love coffee, and I found what I believe to be the absolute best coffee out there. With Day Soul Coffee Lab, you can be sure to get coffee that's super smooth and always fresh roasted. Some of the best, if not the best coffee you'll ever drink. So swing over to the website, daysoulcoffeelab.co, and use promo code LOWDOWN to get 10% off your order. They even have a subscription option where they'll deliver coffee directly to you every month. So guys, it's a no-brainer. If you're going to drink coffee, you might as well make it great coffee. What is up, everyone? Welcome to the latest installment of the Lowdown Popcast, where we keep it popping on all of your favorite topics about real life. I am your host, Elliot Poston. Be sure to follow the show on all social media platforms at Lowdown Popcast and use hashtag TLDP for anything you want to reference towards us. And you can also follow me on the social media at the Elliot Poston. And tonight, we have someone who's been on the show before with his brother. He is a former VPW Viral Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champion, former UPWA Tag Team Champion, according to what I'm reading, former PWI International Heavyweight Champion, two-time PWF Tag Team Champion, EWA Junior Heavyweight Champion, CWF Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champion, five-time AML Tag Team Champion, and former AML heavyweight champion. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Mr. Zane Dawson.
Hey, now.
I hope I got all this right.
Longest reigning. Oh, yeah. You know something. That EWA light heavyweight champion is a doozy, boy. The heaviest light heavyweight champion in history, by the way.
Hey, you
just... longest reigning AML heavyweight champion as well.
457 days.
That's right, man. No one's touched it.
454, I'm sorry.
Who's counting?
Yeah, well, touche. Before we get started, guys, be sure to head on over to the Dawson Brothers page and check out the No Slip Phone Grip and Spider Grip. That's SPIDERGRIP. Spider Grip, www.SPIDERGRIP.com. Head on over to the Dawson Brothers Facebook page and everything, and you can probably, they may have an affiliate link or something to click. I don't know.
But yeah, that's our buddy David Britt, man. He's a good guy. He's got a great product. Yeah, man, he's a great person.
Yeah, man, I see y'all post stuff about it all the time, and I'm just like, man, that is it looks really, really, really neat. I'm sitting and scrolling through all these different pictures.
Oh yeah, man. We've done a lot of work with him, some commercials and stuff where me and Dave have fought each other and,
Hilarious, by the way.
Yeah. We actually went up to, New Jersey with him, and we were on, I think it was called America's Big Deal. It was the first ever episode. It was on the USA Network.
Nice.
And we came in like second place or something like that. But yeah, it was pretty crazy being on national TV and spandex.
Superstar. Yeah, right. So man, first and foremost, thank you for joining the show. Since we've talked last time, you'd recently had a baby boy last time we spoke, and you just talking to me about him earlier and how, you had some excitement this afternoon and, peanut butter jelly time, man.
Peanut butter jelly time. Yeah, he's a year and a half. About, I think he's over a year and a half now. Got about 28 teeth in his mouth. I don't even know how many teeth he's got. He's climbing on everything, biting everything. screaming at the top of his lungs, but
man, it sounds like his dad.
Yeah, he takes after me really a lot. Yeah, I love him though. He's great.
You know, my parents always told me that your children give it back to you twice as hard as you gave it to your parents. So,
yep. And I've been praying to God since I found out that my wife was pregnant a year and a half ago. Please. Me and my brother were really bad kids, so I'm only hoping. And he actually has a baby boy himself now. So, there's going to be some Dawson cousins running around here soon, just breaking holes in walls and stuff soon.
Hey, train them up the way they should go, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm dreading it. I'm dreading the, but I'm way bigger than my dad used to be. So I'm going to be body slamming some kids soon.
Well, so it's funny you say that because I'm much bigger than my dad too. My dad's 5'10", 5'11", like 220 pounds. I'm 6'3". At my heaviest, I've been 332. I've lost some weight. I'm about 290, 285, 290 now. But, man, I look at my 8-year-old son. He's a hoss, dude. I mean, he's almost 5 foot tall.
Yikes.
And he's 8.
Oh, man.
And I'm just, he's 120, 130 pounds. And I'm just thinking, man, when this guy's a teenager, I'm going to pull out a second mortgage on the house, just feed the guy.
Yeah, exactly. No, and our situation is the same. Like, my dad's like 5'7". You know what I mean? He's a small, he was a short guy. So me and my brother were 250 at 15, 6 foot at 15 years old.
Yep.
Looking at him like, what are you going to do, dad? So luckily, me and my brother are both 6'2" and, 300 pounds. So we're ready for it with these two little hosses coming up. So,
well, and if your son ends up being anything like mine, like he'll, my son looks forward to the day that he's like my size. He's like, Dad, you think I'm going to be, think I'll ever be as big as you? I'm like, son, if I'm being honest, I think you're going to be bigger than me, but
yeah, he's already sizing you up.
Look. But, there's one thing I always have that you don't have, son. That's called old man strength.
That's right. That's the truth.
And it's one of those things Toby Keith said, I ain't as good as I once was, but I'm as good as once as ever was.
That's right. That's right. I tried my dad whenever I was 16, and I'll never do it again, even to this day. Even if he is 5 inches shorter than me.
It's funny because, it's funny how whenever we're teenagers, adolescents, going through puberty and getting through high school and all that, we get those moments where we feel like we might be able to size up our dad and stuff. And, My dad was firm. He was strict, but my dad wasn't mean. We talked briefly about him earlier, about some things that you and I may be doing different than what our fathers may have done. Doesn't mean our fathers were bad in any means, but there's just certain things that we just parent different, right?
Oh yeah.
And so I kind of did the same thing. Trying to kind of size up my dad. But for me, it was whenever I was probably in college. I wouldn't say tried to size him up. I've always had a healthy fear/respect for my dad. I think part of that is just the way he raised us through in the church, through our faith and, how I saw him, beat my brothers enough that I didn't want them to do it to me. So, right. So, but I remember, for me, I think this was a time, honestly, was a turning point in my life where I finally felt like maybe I had my dad's respect. And, it was my great grandmother had died and I'd missed the visitation. I missed it because I wasn't aware when it was. And so we were getting ready for the funeral. And, my understanding was him and my mom was going to let me know when the visitation was, all that. And then I can make plans to get there. And, I never heard when it was. They called me during visitation one evening, and I was like, I had a show. I got a show tonight because I was playing in a rock band at the time. And I said, y'all didn't tell me when it was going to be. I didn't know when it was going to be. And I remember us being in the kitchen and me talking to Mom, and she was crying. And she was crying obviously because she was upset because her grandmother passed away. And he came in, he kind of laid into me. And I looked at him, and I it was the only time I ever bowed up on my dad. But I bowed back up at him and had some words with him, and basically said something along the lines of, hey, no, you're not putting this on me. Should I have maybe inquired when the visitation was? Yeah. But you told me that you were going to let me more information, and you didn't. So I know Mom's upset, and I know you're upset that Mom's upset, but you're not taking it out on me. And if you want to do something, old man, do it.
Oh,
and those are the words I said. And steam could have gone. And when I said that, my mom immediately let my dad said, you need to go. And I remember looking at my mom and just telling her I was sorry that if I'd known it, I'd have been there. And, you know, that, but I think that's when my dad, there was a turning point for me and my dad where he was like, all right, he's not a kid anymore. Mm. You know, I don't have to treat him like a kid. You know, if he's man enough to talk to me and bow up to me like that and really stand his ground, then he's a man now.
Let's go. Yeah. I have a similar story. It was about when I was 15 or 16, and me and my brother always, you know, tried to do wrestling moves on everybody.
The couch.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, until the couch was broken, we put holes in the walls. We tried putting figure fours on my sister, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. So we would always toy around with my, and mind you, this is the disclaimer. I would have done the same exact thing to me if what I'm about to tell you happened to me. Yeah. So my dad in no way was in the wrong at all. So me and my brother, you know, at the time, I think we were backyard wrestling. Yeah. Something like that. And we put, man, we were in my, I'll never forget this. We put the crippler crossface and that Kurt Angle ankle lock on my dad at the same time. Oh. Now, mind you, we're not workers yet. So we're,
y'all torquing,
we're wrenching it as hard as we can. Right. So, and my dad at the time, like he would wrestle around with us. So it wasn't like, leave me alone. And we were just bullying him or not. So he would be in there, you know, wrestling around with us. And man, we put that on him and we wrenched hard. And I remember my brother just Kurt Angling his ankle like crazy. And we ended up getting off of him. And my dad grabbed me around like in a sleeper kind of. And he had a good little grip on me. And I started like, I could feel myself fading away, like fading, you know what I mean? So I did the only thing I could do. And I just kind of rammed him into the wall, like backwards. Right. And obviously,
rock.
Oh yeah, no, it was, I mean, we almost went through that thing, but obviously he could tell like, okay, we weren't playing around anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Like this has gotten serious. And I was like trying to like, let's go, dad. You know what I'm saying? Like we're
fight
not
or flight.
Play wrestling anymore. Like get off of me and let's go. And I'll never forget. Like I had rammed him into the wall and I put my fists up like I was going to fight him. And my mom had gotten like, all right, y'all need to calm down. And I just saw my dad parting the Red Sea and coming through like this. And I mean, square in my nose, boom. And I immediately was like, oh my gosh, like I'll never. And mind you, my dad's like 5'8", you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And me and my dad's relationship is amazing now. And I'm not saying because of this night and he, you know, busted my nose, but I remember going out into the middle of the road. 'Cause we lived on this highway. and my brother bringing me an entire roll of toilet paper, like here, because I'm like puddling in my, you know, it was crazy. And I'll never forget the, because it was about 9 o'clock at night. I saw in the silhouette of my door, my dad's little tiny frame just standing in the doorway. And then he beelines out to the road. Like, if you're going to be a man, let's go. Like, let's go. You know what I mean? Like if we've crossed that threshold now, let's go. And I'm like, no. I'm daddy. I'm good. I'm 4 years old again. No, yeah, I don't want
I'm
no
I'm just parts trying to fix my nose, Dad.
Yeah. I don't want no parts of it. And mind you, like I said, I would have probably done the same thing to my 250-pound son trying to fight me, you know, because
full,
I was
full of testosterone, by the way, at the age of 16, 17 years old.
Chocked full of it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And mind you, I'm putting my dukes up trying to fight him. I'd have done the same thing in his position.
Sure.
And we've talked about it numerous times, and like, I don't have any ill will because, like I said, I would have done way worse. But yeah, man, I feel like when you get to that point, you got to make a choice whether, okay, is it time? Is it that time? You know what I'm saying? Like, cause just like you were saying, your dad's like, hey, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Like, and you on the other end felt the same exact way. You know what I mean? But
yeah. So my dad is, like I said, my dad's always kind of been stern or strict, but man, heart of gold. And you know, he would, we knew daddy meant business. If he ever said a cuss word, oh, we knew it was, oh, it's bad. Because he's never did. I can count on one hand and not fill it up probably how many times I heard my daddy say a cuss word. I mean, it's just you know, but what's so how many siblings? I know you got Dave, but how many other siblings you have?
We have an older sister. She's like 3 years older than we are. So,
between you and Dave, which one of you would probably be the bigger prankster, the one who doesn't care as much? I mean,
probably me.
Yeah. So
I've always been the more rambunctious. Like, Dave would go to sleep at night. I would stay up like, rah, time to, you know what I mean? And my back to the dad thing, like my dad was the same way that you're saying. Like, my dad was very strict, but heart of gold. He worked all the time, and we had a healthy fear of him as well. Cause you know, by 15, when my mom is giving us whoopings, we're like, mom, stop. You know what I mean? Like, we can't feel that anymore, but she'd go, oh, okay, well, I'll just call your dad. And we're like, no. Okay, we'll stop. Cause we knew if he's having to come home after a long day of work and have to deal with some crazy kids, you know, cause we were nuts, man.
Yeah.
We were bad kids. You know what I mean? And to this day, I apologize to my parents, you know, about the stuff we did, but I would say me, you know, cause I was always probably the one goating Dave into doing stuff with me. You know what I mean? So I would say me.
Have you noticed that since you've gotten older, that your relationship with your dad has become more like a friendship?
Oh yeah.
And there's stuff I'll say to my dad now, like certain jokes I'll tell my dad. There's no way 20 years ago I would have told my dad this stuff.
Oh yeah. And now I tell my dad, like, all right, Dad, like, let's go again. Like, I'm way bigger and I'm whatever now. But no, it definitely is like mine and his relationship, and even my brother and his relationship. We have a really good relationship with him now. I mean, and we didn't have a bad relationship back then.
It's just changed.
You know what I mean? Like, it's very, you know, especially after having kids. Oh my gosh, man. I don't know if I touched on this on the last podcast that we did, but a week after my little man was born, I messaged my mom and dad and was just like, I'm sorry for everything I ever did. Yeah. Like, because I realized the love that they had for me because of what I have for him. You know what I mean? And it made me feel like crap, but I feel like that's, you know, that's the conviction that God's given me, like, hey man, you know what I mean? Like you know, and my parents always tell me like, oh no, everything was fine. And you were just a kid. Like, listen, I knew full well what I was doing whenever I was a kid, whenever I was turning away, you know, from you guys and taking your love for granted for me. So it was, man, I wrote him a book. Like, I'm so sorry for everything I did. It's like, but it's made our relationship way stronger now. Like, I love my relationship with my parents now because it's, you know, they're, and they always look at me like, I told you. And I'm like, I know. Cause they would tell us everything growing up that I'm dealing with right now. You know what I mean? So,
well, and it's, I don't know if your dad or mom has said the same thing, but my dad's let me said, if I could have had grandchildren first, I would have.
Oh yeah.
But no, I mean, but it's interesting, right? Because, you know, it's, the older we get, the closer we get, hopefully, the closer we get to our parents. You know, I feel for people who really have a hard relationship with their parents. And I can't empathize because I can't relate. I'll say I can show empathy and sympathy, but I can't relate because I have two amazing parents. But like, have you or Dave ever done, well, I'll let you speak for yourself. Have you ever done stuff like to your brother or your dad, like in public and be like, you know, especially now that you're older, because it's just like, there's nothing you're going to do. And I don't care if they do anything else back.
Well, I can speak for Dave because we're twins and we're pretty much the same person. I mean, we're two different, completely different people, but I mean, biologically we were one and became two. I mean, I always mess around with my dad, you know, and like back in the day we were bad. So I'm going to keep reiterating this. We were horrible kids. So we would like pick on him trying to be cool and stuff like that. But now the stuff that we would pick on him about, oh my God, it's so endearing to me. Like, I love it. And it makes me like smile and almost tear up whenever, you know what I mean? Like me and my brother and my sister have a great relationship too. So, excuse me, we'll say things that we used to say back in the day as like a joke, trying to pick on my father, or my mother or something like that. But now it just makes us smile because like, oh, that's, you know, that's dad and mom. But if we're ever out, definitely, like we pick on each other all the time. So, but my dad mainly looks at me like, oh, okay. Yeah. And he'll do it back to me, you know?
So let me tell you what I did one time. So me and my wife were, I think, just recently engaged. Maybe we were just recently. No, I'm pretty sure we're engaged. Me, my now wife, my brother, their wives, or my brothers, their wives, my parents, we all go to this restaurant. And me, my two brothers, and my dad all go to the bathroom. Well, my dad, there's three urinals and a stall. My dad goes to one urinal. Oldest brother goes to another urinal. Of course, there's one in the middle. And then my middle brother goes to the stall. So me being the guy I am, I'm like, oh, this is happening. So I go to the middle stall, and I baby boy it. You know what I mean when I say baby boy it? I drop trowel all the way to my ankles. And I'm sitting there, and my dad looks at me, God, dog. So then he's just chuckling the whole time. My oldest brother looks at me, he's dying laughing. And then the best part was whenever my middle brother walks out the stall, because I hear him undoing the lock. I'm like, Ryan. And he comes, he says, what? And when he looks, I mean, it's bare butt just right in front of him. And,
oh my God,
we walk out and my brothers, my dad are just dying laughing, sit down. My dad's like, Susan, your son ain't right. That's it. He's just not right.
Isn't that the thing? They always say, hey, your son is, your daughter is,
yeah.
Sorry, me and my wife do it now. Like if my son was bad for her or did something that, you know what your son did today? I'm like, oh, he's my son right now. Okay. I do the same thing. So.
But man, going back to, you know, you being new to fatherhood, man. So ain't it interesting how, you know, having a child can put the perspective of God's love for us into place.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and honestly, like, I've recently dealt with that, I mean, in the last month or so, as far as me realizing that, just because, like I said, whenever I messaged my family, like, I realized the love that you had for me as a kid, and I was turning away from it. Like, I had the same conversation with God, like, man, I this is how much you love me, because I'll literally, man, I'll say, I don't even care. Like, I've cried more since my son was born than I ever have in my entire life. Like, facts. Just every little thing, like, it'll catch me. And like, when I have realizations like that, if I'm being real with myself, like, it'll get me, you know what I mean? Like, if I hear song lyrics or something, or if I, you know, see something in a movie or, it just anything, see my son doing stuff, like it'll, or I'll just get to thinking about, you know, things and it'll make me, it'll get me choked up. You know what I mean? Because I've toyed with trying to be phony my entire life. And it's just, it's too much work. So, man, I've tried to be just real with myself about everything.
You know, like, you know what I've noticed since I've become a parent? Like, really, right, hits me hard every time I see them. The military videos with the parent, where the dad is, or the mom is coming back from deployment and surprise their kids. Dude, I cry every single time I see those. I'm like,
I can't watch them. I can't watch them. It literally the same exact thing. And I saw one probably a week ago, not even joking. And it's always the little, I mean, mind you, the girls running up to their daddies and stuff too. But when them little boys break down, it's like, oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? Cause that feeling, I completely agree. Them things get me.
Yeah. So I don't know how it was with you when you first saw your son, but I remember, being in the delivery room, with my wife and, holding the leg, Doc said, hold a leg. And I was like, all right. And I just remember, I literally watched and stared the whole time. Because to me, it was just fascinating, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd worked in the medical field a good bit, you know, in the medical equipment industry. And so, like, none of that stuff really bothered me. I know some people's like, oh, I can't watch, you know, type of thing. But for me, it was fascinating. And I remember my son coming out and clipping the cord. And holding them for the first time, and audibly I heard God say, "It's your job to raise him to be a godly man." And when I tell you, man, the weight I felt immediately, ton of joy. Don't get me wrong. I mean, more joy than I could handle. Mm-hmm. But the weight of, man, I've got to raise him. I've got to raise him to be a man.
Yeah.
In today's world. Ooh. God, what does that look like?
Insanity. I kind of had the same, like, I wanted to do the hold the leg and watch the whole process. And that was the plan. And I think we touched on this in the last podcast, but my wife went through like 65 plus hours of labor. To the point where she was, I forgot what they call it, progressional, something like that. So we had to do a C-section. Yeah, we had to do a C-section. So that time period of me getting in scrubs and putting a beard, you know, a beard, because this is in 2021.
Oh, that was COVID.
I should know this. It was super COVID, baby. So, like, I had mask on top of mask on top of mask, and I'm in the waiting room waiting because, I mean, I've never been through anything like this, so I don't know the process or anything. So they sit me in front of these two big double doors, And I'm like, I'm going to be in there, right? I don't want to watch you slicing her open, but I'm going to at least be by her side. So it was like a planned deal. Like these two doors swoosh open and this doctor's like this lady. So I get up and walk and follow her, walk into the room, and I see the sheet up with my wife's from here up pretty much is all I could see. And I sat down right next to her and she's numb, doesn't know what's going on. And she's like, "Hey, I love you." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I love you." Like, just trying to be there for her. And then when they got the baby out, it was super crazy because I didn't know what to expect. Like, they didn't say, "Hey, this is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do." I could feel them like tugging on her. But she was super numb. So she couldn't feel anything. So she's looking at me like, "Is everything good? Are we?" I'm like, "I hope so." Like, so they ended up pulling the baby out and then like dropping the sheet like, "Hey, here's your little boy." And I'm like, "Oh, man." And they call me over. And mind you, they're putting her back together and sewing her back up. And I go over there and I can't take my eyes off of them. And I snip the cord and everything like that. And they had to. So I stayed with the baby immediately when they took him out until she was done being stitched up and brought into the recovery room. And mind you, we put the baby on her.
Yeah. Immediately, skin to skin, all that.
Even while they're stitching her up, just because we requested that type of thing. And we were able to do that. But then they were like, "Hey, follow me with the baby." But I had the same realization that you did, where I'm looking at him in all my scrubs in the recovery room, waiting on my wife to get wheeled in. And they're like, and the same thought came in my head was, "Hey man, this is yours now." Like, ain't no, you know, this isn't a video game you rented from Blockbuster. Look at that old,
hey,
that dates me right there. But this isn't something that you're going to give back. You know, this is yours and you're responsible for it. You know what I mean? You and your wife are responsible for this child. And you know what I mean? Especially lately. And mind you, I've always been, you know, I've always believed in God and believed in Jesus. And I mean, but I've backslid like a lot of people have. But recently, it's literally been a thought in my head as well. Like, man, I got to raise this boy to be a God-fearing man, to where, especially in this climate where you hear all this stuff and everything's being changed before our eyes, you know what I'm saying? And I'm supposed to teach him what my parents were trying to teach me back in the day that I was running from, you know what I mean? So it's going to be way harder than it was, you know, in my situation now, especially with the climate and the way of the world is now, you know? So,
you know,
I'm ready for it though.
I heard something the other day and here it is. I heard it and I was like, man, that's that was good. And it was it was out of Esther 4:14. And so it was talking about, you know, our parents being raised by their parents, our parents raising us, and now us raising our kids. And what the person preached was, you can't do it like your parents did. Your parents weren't equipped to parent in today's world, but you are. And it went back to, it quoted Esther 4:14. And this is the Message version. It says, "If you persist in staying silent at a time like this, help and deliverance will arrive for the Jews from someplace else, but you and your family will be wiped out. Who knows? Maybe you were made queen for just such a time as this," but it's talking about it was talking about Esther. But that's what they're referencing was Esther, where it says, "Hey, you were made for such a time like this." Like when God looked at everything, God said, no, Elliot, you're equipped to raise a godly man in this time. Mm. Where your mom and dad weren't. Mm. I was just like, whoa. It definitely put things into perspective and definitely eased some of that stress, right?
Yeah. Kind of put you at peace with dealing with it, because and I've realized, you know, a lot lately that, you know, God's not going to give you anything that you can't handle. You know what I mean? And I'm a super flawed person, like everybody is. You know, none of us are, we all fall short. You know what I mean? When it comes to a comparison.
See, I've always said opposite of that. I've always said God will definitely give you more than you can handle. Mm. But he does that because because you need to learn to lean on him.
Ah, yeah, that's true. That's very true. That's very true. And it'll build you into what you need to be to deal with it as well. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's good. But it's one of the things that, like what we were talking about before we went on air, just trusting in him for the answer, you know what I mean, is the key to it. You know, he can open our eyes. And mind you, we all equip ourselves with things that we need in life. But like you said, we're built to raise the children now. Like nobody that has babies was given the manual and said, all right, this is how you got to do it. This is where you're supposed to go next. And this is what, I mean, me and my wife were literally like, what do we do now? You know what I'm saying? Like, and we, you know, and I'm sure you talk to different people and they all say, you know, the first ones you go nuts on, the second one you kind of take it easy because you know what you're dealing with. But I feel like it's going to be like that with everything. You know what I mean? You know, we're always going to say, oh my gosh.
Speaking from experience with two kids, right? My first was a son. My second was a daughter. They're different, dude. I'm sorry. Are there some things that it's like, okay, you can draw from your first one from? Absolutely. Without a doubt, you can look at some of the things you did with your first one and say, hey, that didn't work, or yeah, that worked. Let's see if it works for this one. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, then back to square one. But no, there's definitely differences in raising two kids. And it's not a bad thing. Like, so I needed my son. But I also needed my daughter. My daughter has taught me to be softer and not so hard. Because I know I'm hard on my son. I know I am. And I think it just comes natural. Because I see the world around him. I see the greatness in him. And it's my job as a father to pull it out. You know, I have high expectations, but at the same time, something that I always strived for when I was younger that hindered me was perfection. But I didn't learn what I needed to strive for until probably about 5 or 6 years ago, where instead of seeking perfection, I need to seek excellence. And when I flipped that switch in my mind, man, so many things changed for the better. Because if I'm pursuing excellence instead of perfection, I can only attain perfection in Jesus. But if I'm pursuing excellence, that means everything I'm doing today, I'm doing it the best way I can, which means it'll be better than it was yesterday, and tomorrow will be better than it is today.
Yeah. Man, that's good. Yeah. Cause I was, you know, afflicted with the same thing, like trying to be, you know, people pleaser, trying to be perfect, trying to be the perfect boyfriend, trying to be the perfect friend, trying to be the perfect wrestler, trying to be the perfect this. But yeah, you can't. You're always going to let everybody down. You know what I mean? But like you're saying, striving for the excellence is being the best you can be at what you're doing and then leaving the rest in God's hands, because he's the only one that has been able to achieve that perfection thing everybody's chasing, you know?
So, yeah. And, I mean, and man, it's, I'm trying to help my son understand that at a young age as well, is if he can grasp and understand excellence, man, it will alleviate so much stress in your life. Because man, I beat myself up so bad for 30 plus years because of that. I'd fail, and because I failed, I was a failure. But what I've learned over the past several years is, no, when you fail, you failed. How do you fix it?
Right.
Where'd you fail at? Can you redeem it? And if not, then move on.
Right. And I think a lot of us have the problem with, you know, we were all brought up to put that mask on and, you know what I mean? Like, you know, never show that you're dealing with those feelings. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's a hot topic nowadays to talk about all that type of stuff, but it's real. Like, it's a real, you know, I've always been the guy that, I was always the happy guy, you know, in any setting. You know, if I'm at a show, I was always the outgoing, talkative guy. If I was at a party years ago, I was always the outgoing, talkative guy. Whenever I worked in the bars, I was always the charismatic guy. I mean, I even my jobs that I've had throughout my life in customer service, and I've always been able to talk to people. And you have to, you know, you have to shut that part of you off. You know what I mean? But I've been through the same thing. Like, it hits me where I get in a depression to a point where, but nobody knows about it.
No, I'm with you, buddy.
It's I'm dealing with it, but I'll definitely like I was saying before, I've tried for so long and been this phony person to where I would make everybody think that I was okay. But on the inside, I mean, and it was, I'm sure that there was people that could tell, you know, like my real close friends and things of that nature. And I mean, like, there would be things physically to the point where it would affect me physically. Like, there was a point in my life where I was in really, really great shape. I look back now and one thing would happen or something I would be striving for and didn't get it, and I would fail at it, and it would bring me into a depression. And I'm to the point now, and now mind you, I'm working all this through God's help, still to this day, and trying to get back in the routine of things. But for a long time, man, that's all I did was beat myself up, you know, but nobody knew about it. Nobody could tell because I put that mask on and, you know, I would go about my business. But on the outside and on the inside, I mean, physically, I could see myself, you know, falling out of what the routine I was in. And on the inside, definitely, like, I got to a point where I was just hating myself because I would say, oh, I failed at that, or hey, I was on the bus here and I fell off of it. Now it's, you know, there's nothing I can do. But like you said, the right thing to do is to say, hey, I failed. Where did I mess up and what do I need to do to fix it? You know what I mean? Because that's the way we're not stuck in that. Because for years, and only through the help of God and like me realizing and him helping me realize things about myself, because I'm not, you know, if I'm feeling a type of way now, and I'm a man. So when there's certain things that I have to, you know, keep to my vest. But as far as whenever I have issues with things, like, I communicate those because I don't want to fall back into that depression. You know what I mean?
It's one of those things that I get what you're saying. Like, there's certain things that I can, for me as a man, I believe there's certain things I absolutely, some people say, oh, share everything with your wife. I'm like, yeah, you know what? There's certain things as a man that, you know, I just have to have other men that I can share with.
Yeah.
Because where my wife is great and I love her more than anything in this world, there's just some things that when it comes to manhood, she just doesn't understand. Right. She doesn't know what, she doesn't get why necessarily. She can empathize and sympathize, but she does still doesn't necessarily understand why. You know, someone I was talking to the other day, made the comment, don't you feel like you're doing too much? And I straight up looked at him and said, listen, if I don't stay busy, doing something, then I will kill myself. Mm. And, you know, not necessarily like literally kill myself, but, you know, my mental game goes down. I start overthinking things. If I'm alone, my mind just wanders like, okay. And man, do these people really like me? Man, why is this not happening? And I get consumed with things that don't even exist. Right? Nothing but thoughts. So, so that's why I do a podcast. That's why if people want me to try and do logos, I'll do logos on the side. That's why I've started playing out again now, and I hadn't in 11 years. That's why I'm getting back and leading worship on Sundays when I'm scheduled to lead worship. You know, that's why I'm part owner of a wrestling company. There's a reason that I stay busy. And for me, people who don't necessarily understand how we think, they'll just say, oh, he's just staying busy. But for me, it's like, no, I stay busy because if I'm not busy,
I'm dead. Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah,
you know, some people, and then other people will say, well, then maybe you should see a shrink or a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I'm like, I don't need to medicate. Some people do. And if you need to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist and get help because of a chemical imbalance and get medication, hey, go for it. I support that. I support people's mental health. But for me, what helps me is first fulfilling passion and purpose. My passion and my purpose is music. It has been for over 20 years. And this goes to something else. Someone asked me, hey, what's it like being on stage? I'm like, it's one of the best feelings ever. They're like, well, is it the same as leading worship? I said, absolutely not. It's completely different. You know, there's a difference between leading someone to God and then playing for people. You know, when I'm doing a show, I'm just an entertainer. But when I'm up on stage on Sunday morning, hey, it's my job to get you into the throne room of God and let you experience him the way he wants to reveal himself to you. And that's it.
Right. Yeah.
What's some things that maybe Zane for you that you would maybe tell other guys, hey, I recommend this to keep your sanity, or hey, because you know, when it comes to manhood and mental health and all that, what's some things that we can maybe do?
Yikes. Man, for me, it's having a relationship with God first and foremost. And maybe people don't believe or whatever the case may be. And if we're talking strictly about like a mental health scenario, talk with somebody, you know, and I know that that's a cliche thing to say, like, listen, I'm the first one to tell you I'm a super flawed person. You know, I'm nowhere near perfect. I struggle on a daily basis with things. I'm nowhere, you know, I listen to podcasts a lot and maybe people that talk about mental health, and maybe it might sound like that they have everything all together. I don't. I still struggle on a daily basis. And the things that help me are realizing, being real with myself, being very self-aware. A buddy of mine who has a podcast called Wrestling with the Mind.
Sigmund. He was on last week.
I was going to say, I just saw that you guys had a podcast together. Man, look, and this is, I was going to message him and tell him this. I listen to his podcast like over and over and over again, especially like the ones where he doesn't, and nothing against these because he has great interviews with people, but the ones where he doesn't have an interview, like he, and maybe it's the silky tone of his voice, but
he's a very smooth talker.
He is, man. But literally, like the things that he'll bring up in reference, as far as like from studies that are done and stuff, like I listen to that a lot. As far as like, and it'll help me. But it's the man being self-aware about things and realizing the issues that you have, and not being phony about them. Like when you realize that you have an anger problem, then you need to take the steps to fix the anger problem. Yeah. You know, if you have a problem with communication, then you need to take the steps to start communicating better. And everybody has problems. So I know I'm not,
hey, let's go deeper with that. Right. You know, hey, if you have a problem with alcoholism,
man,
if you have a problem with drugs.
Yes.
Hey, here's one that, many people may not see a problem with. Hey, let's talk about porn addiction, all right?
Dude, if we're getting deep into all that stuff, I've dealt with every single thing that you're talking about. You know what I mean? I've dealt with, you know, I used to be a heavy cigarette smoker. One day, and mind you, I can come up with every excuse in the book to, you know, keep doing it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's killing you. You know what I mean? And that's, hey, man, you can either continue to do this and kill yourself, or you cannot do it and be real with yourself and honest with yourself that this is hurting you. Same thing with everything that you just mentioned. You know, I was a drug addict at a certain point where I was, you know, and nothing crazy. I've never been addicted to anything hard. But what's hard? To me, cigarettes are way more harmful to you than a lot of things. You know what I mean? But I got to a point where all this stuff is an excuse,
right?
You know, everything is an excuse. The stuff with porn, I mean, that stuff is all over the place. You know what I mean? It's everywhere. It's so easily accessible to view it. Like it's literally pushed in your face constantly throughout the entire day. So you really have to, and I mind you, I've dealt and am dealing with things like that still to this day. I'm nowhere near perfect when it comes to stuff like that, but it's one of the things where you have to realize and take accountability for yourself. That's another thing. The being self-aware and being accountable for what, you know, stop trying to make excuses for yourself. Stop trying to make excuses why you do things or why that's not the case. You have to take accountability for what you're doing wrong. And then you take the steps to change them. You know, you just bringing it back to what, like you said, you realize where you're failing at and you do what you got to do to fix it. You know what I mean? And even if you fall off on your journey of fixing those things, that's fine. You know, it's just you can't let yourself go backwards. You have to realize where you failed and take the steps to fix it, you know?
Well, and you know, for things that are deep rooted in us, sometimes it's realizing, or I'll say more than sometimes, a lot of the times it's realizing that, hey, you know what? We don't have the power to redeem or restore or fix, but man, we have a God who loved us so much that he sent his only son to die for us. John 3:16 tells us that for God so loved the world, he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life. And 3:17, people tend to look over, but it tells us, for Jesus came not to condemn the world, but to save it. And man, it's such a great thing to have to serve a God who can take something that's broken, fix it, and it be better than it was before. Because I don't know about you, Zane, but I know if I try to fix something that was broken, it's not better than it was before. It's flawed.
Yeah.
Talking about, porn addiction and stuff, and we can even go deeper with that, with just sexual immorality in general. And the best way I've ever heard it described was a pastor, mentor of mine. We were talking, and he basically put it like this. He said, anything that deviates from the original path that God intended is sin. Anything. So when God created Adam, he created Adam a helpmate and Eve, and they were married. Anything that deviates from that. So, guys, hey, just know if you're one of the guys out there who's struggling with that, there's multiple Christian sites that can help you with that struggle. Triple X Church, I know, is one of them, or was one of them. I got a friend of mine who's actually looking at. He's in the process right now of starting an organization to help with people who are struggling with porn addiction, to help counsel them out of it. So I highly recommend finding a Christian counselor, guys, that is willing to walk with you through that addiction if it's something you're dealing with. But
and just to circle back, like everything that I mentioned before, that's just being a mature adult and looking at it that way. Yep. I fall short, like I said, constantly, and my answer for everything is to look up at God for the help. And I ask him constantly, hey, I'm dealing with this. Like, the reason I gave up cigarettes and drugs and things of that nature is I reached up to God and said, hey, I can't do this without you.
Sure.
I need help from you to do this. You know what I mean? And mind you, like, every answer that I have is going to be looked to God for it, because yep. like I said, I'm nothing without him. You know what I mean? As far as, I don't know where my life would be without, the help from my family growing up, and my mother specifically. Like, she's always here, and she's told me straight, whenever I have issues or I've, called her for, advice on parenting or things of that nature. And she's been like, you know what you need to do. what I'm saying? So she always brings it back to me as far as like, well, you know who you need to talk to. You know what I mean? So it's at the end of the day, man, he's the one that brings me out from everything.
Yeah. And there's a reason Paul tells us to live our lives that way. Right. Paul tells us, hey, but and this is me paraphrasing, God first, family second, actually God first, wife second, kids third, then ministry. And then everything else, So, I as a father, it's easy to build those kids, sneak in front of mama. Right. careful, but, man, it's so important that we make sure God is the center of all of our relationships and center of everything. And, everything. I want to hit on one last thing. And I think this right here culminates, Zane, how we exemplify manhood. It's found in 1 Timothy 6, verse 11. It says, flee from these things. man of God and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness.
That's good.
I think about, well, first I look at it, I'm like, man, there's some things in that one verse right there that I know I need to work on.
Yeah.
Man, I look at, you know, gentleness isn't really what today's society considers a manly trait, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the man's gruff. He's got rough hands. He's Sam Elliott-esque.
Yeah.
But man, Timothy says, pursue righteousness, pursue godliness, pursue faith, pursue love, perseverance and gentleness, fight the good fight of faith, take hold of the eternal life to which you were called, and you made the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. Or, hey, letting people know that you're a Christian.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that especially now, like, this is, you know, the most persecuted time, you know, in history. I mean, obviously I wasn't back in the days of Jesus. So,
sure.
But today, man, if you, it's the only way I could, it's the attitude era of the time, for where when you're doing everything good, when you're the Bret Hart of your life, where you're literally following every rule and trying to be as good as you can, you're spit on, you know, which is what they did to him in the attitude era to bring it around to wrestling. But like nowadays, like, if you know, I watch videos of preachers on the street or things where they're just trying to preach their message and they're just like spit at, and they're people throw drinks in their faces, or they come up and just persecute them. And it's like, man, this guy's literally, regardless of what you feel about it, like nothing he's doing is going to hurt anybody. It's not, people want to take the Bible out of context and say, oh, you know, you're judging, and they want to misread scripture and want to,
the people who scream for tolerance are the most intolerant.
Man, and it's so crazy how they that's what they live on, is the one little out of context thing that they just want to do to attack somebody that's professing their faith. You know what I mean? And to me, it's they're trying to do good. Jesus's message was love, and there wasn't anything negative about what he was. But nowadays, if you say that, you're looked at, oh, you're somebody who believes in that. What do you mean?
It's helping people understand, hey guys, I'm not here to condemn you, right? But I love you so much and I care so much for your soul that if I didn't share this with you, then I hate you.
Yeah.
And I can't hate. If I hate, I can't enter the kingdom of God. I can't be a follower of Christ and have hate in my heart. It's impossible.
Well, and like we say, we always fall short. So we're always going to deal with things like that. And it's always our responsibility to look to God.
Thank God for grace. And
exactly. And realize that he, like you said, sent his son to die for us all. And whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Like that's the answer for everything, you know, and even if I'm persecuted to the day that I die, I'll never deny my faith. Like it's a very, you know, that's the one of the things that has been instilled in me from a super young age, even when I fell off and backslid like crazy whenever I was growing older, it was always well, no, that's what it is. You know what I mean? Like Jesus died for our sins and God is God loves us. And even if I'm just like the love my parents had for me. And I realized whenever I had my son that the love that they did have for me, even though I pushed it away as I was a teenager willingly, you know, I willingly pushed it away. And it's, but just like how I would look at my son right now, and just like how my parents looked at me and forgave me, God will forgive you.
Yep.
You know, God will forgive you. And God loves you no matter what. He loves you so much that he sent his son down here to die for us. Because we're all going to hell. Every one of us were born going this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he loved us so much that he sent his son down here to die for us. You know, and it's that love, that unconditional love that you realize when you have children, and you realize when you have healthy relationships with your family and stuff, that just how much he loves you. You know, it's miraculous. I love it so much now, especially getting older and the realizations that God's having me have. Like, I love it. Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're good. You know, you mentioned, you know, doesn't matter what you've done, God will forgive you. And, you know, I get, it's easy to feel like you've done way too much for God to forgive you mm-hmm. and to be forgiven. But, you know, we have to remember, and if you're not aware of this, listeners, you know, Matthew 18:21-22, Jesus is actually talking about forgiveness. And Peter came and said to Jesus, "Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times?" Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven." And some people will do math and be like, "Oh, so just 409 times." No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying that, guys, you know, he's using that as an example, figuratively speaking. Hey, up to 500 times, guys.
Yeah.
But in reality, more than that, you know, you forgive because I command you to. And a lot of people, Christians, you need to hear this. You are commanded to forgive. You're not commanded to trust others, but you are commanded to forgive everyone. Because Jesus in Matthew tells us you have to forgive your brother. He doesn't say you have to trust him again, but you have to forgive him.
Right.
So,
I mean, look at the guys on the cross. You know, this is crazy to say, but like I watched The Passion of the Christ probably 3 weeks ago for the first time ever.
Oh,
incredible movie. Incredible movie. And it made me just realize even more about what he did for all of us, and it's just incredible.
Jim Caviezel,
anybody,
man, that guy.
He's in. I watched the Sound of Freedom movie too.
Oh,
he's incredible. He's incredible. But the guy that was on the cross, I saw another video touching on this too. He never did communion. He never.
He went to
church.
It was a pastor from like the '80s or nineties, right?
It was something like that. Yeah,
there's
been a bunch of videos where they talk about how that guy never did this. He never gave tithe. He never, you know, went out on Sundays to church, and he
never got baptized.
Never got baptized. And he believed that Jesus was the Lord and the Messiah. And he said,
Today
you'll be in paradise.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it's just like you said in the passage, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. That's all it takes.
That's it.
You know, and by doing that, God's going to work through you. I saw another one, man. I'm going to just talk about reels that I've seen lately about this stuff, because I see all kinds of them. Like, everybody wants to turn the smoker away, or everybody wants to turn the prostitute away, or you have to stop being a prostitute, or you have to stop smoking weed, or stop drinking before you can be saved. whenever it's God wants, when you're saved, you're not going to want that stuff anymore through God.
God you wants know, your mess.
Yeah, God's going to work through all that and rid you of whatever, you know, as long as you're seeking him and seeking and trusting him to, you know, take those things away from you. You know what I mean? And it's like I said, I'm going to beat this down to all day, but he's the answer for everything. If you have a question about anything or why, everybody says, why God? He's the one to be asking.
And, you know, and a lot of his answers found in a little book called the Bible.
That's right.
And Jesus loves us so much to meet us where we're at, but way too much to leave us there. You know, and that's something that we really hit hard at our church is, man, God doesn't care where you've been. He doesn't care where you are. He'll meet you right there. But he's not leaving you there. Because there's only one thing we can do in Christ, and that's get better.
That's very true. I'm a testimony of that. So I was a horrible person, you know. And like I said, I struggle on a daily basis, but through God, I feel like I've improved personally so much. Just within the last couple of years, doing the work on the inside about being self-aware about things, and then through God helping me on every step of the way, like he's definitely taken me to a whole nother level as far as just everything, you know what I mean? And it's only because of him that I'm here, you know?
Yeah. Dude, it's been fun.
Dude, it was awesome. Thank you so much for having me, man. I had a great time.
Guys, if you're in the Camden, South Carolina area, be sure to check out Revolution Nutrition, where community and nutrition meet. Located in Camden, South Carolina, in the heart of Dusty Bend, they offer healthy protein shakes, iced coffees, energizing herbal teas, aloe refreshers, kid-friendly drinks, and positive vibes. Head on over and mention Lowdown for 10% off. Zane, one last thing to share with you real quick, man. Something that I kind of thought of, and that you can share with others if you feel led to. The devil will only remind you of your past because he doesn't have a future. So, guys, this has been the Lowdown Podcast. We appreciate you tuning in. As always, my name is Elliot. My special guest tonight has been the one and only Zane Dawson, who you can follow him and his brother at the Dawson Brothers. You can find them on Facebook. Check them out at AML Wrestling and all such other promotions. Zane, anything else you want to leave with the people?
Hey, look, we're all flawed, man. God loves you. If any of this has helped one person out, then that's what it's here for, man. But I love everybody. I love you, man. I appreciate you having me on. We'll see you guys down the road.
Absolutely. Guys, this has been the Lowdown Podcast. As always, let's keep it poppin'.